Chris Miles was able to retire twice by the time he was 39 years old. But he's not content to just enjoy his own financial freedom and peace of mind. Chris wants you to have your own ripple effect so you can live free today. He's not the financial advisor you expected. He's the anti-financial advisor you deserve. He's jumping behind the mic right now, ready to make waves. Here's Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome you out for a wonderful show, a show that's for you and about you. Those of you that work so hard for your money and you're ready for your money to start working harder for you now. You want that freedom, that cash flow, that prosperity today, not 30 or 40 bazillion years from now, but right now. So you can have that life that you love, doing what you love, being with those that you love. But on top of that, it's not just the fact that you want to be prosperous yourself and that you want to live a comfortable, amazing life. But on top of that, you actually want to become a rippler in the sense that you want to create a ripple effect through others' lives, because as you're blessed financially, you can bless the lives of those around you as well. And that's the thing I love, that you guys are creating a legacy, that you're creating real impact by blessing more lives. And I appreciate you guys following, you're binging, you're doing everything that's awesome. I appreciate you guys sharing this with everybody else. I love watching the show grow, and you guys are a big part of that. So thank you so much. As a reminder, you can check out our website, moneyripples.com. There's, again, that ebook, Beyond Rice and Beans, 7 Secrets to Free Up Cash Today, you can check out and download for free. So go look at that. Hey guys, quick shout out to our sponsor, American Homeowner Preservation. Hey guys, if you want to make a great rate of return with little money out of pocket, even as little as $100, and do it while helping other people as well, check these guys out. You know, the website's fundingahp.com. The way they do it, they crowdfund money, people's money together to go and help essentially become the bank. They buy up people's mortgages that are defaulting, people that are late on their mortgages. They help them refinance, stay in their home, and or sell their home so that they can be in a better financial position. And the cool thing is that they pay awesome returns and they pay it monthly. And like I said, you can invest with as little as $100. So check them out. Websites, fundingahp.com. That's fundingahp.com. Check them out. So today I've got a special guest here. And again, you guys know I don't bring on guests lightly, right? I want to make sure that I bring on real deals, not just posers, but people that actually are walking the walk and talking the talk. And right now I know a lot of questions that are coming out from both my clients and just others in general, or people saying, well, real estate's horrible right now, right? Like we should probably just be, you know, putting more money in the stock market because it's low, you know, even though it's way lower is the potential for what the market has to go. But people will say, oh, don't do real estate. That's got to be horrible right now. Well, I've got a guest here, Paul Moore, who's been in the industry for a long time. Now, Paul took a different path in the beginning, kind of like a lot of us did, right? He graduated with an engineering degree and an MBA from Ohio State. And then he started on the management track at Ford Motor Company in Detroit. But after 5 years, he decided to leave that job and he started doing a staffing company, which he was able to sell for $2.9 million to a publicly traded company. Along the way, he was the finalist for the Ernst & Young's Michigan Entrepreneur of the Year for 2 years straight. He also later entered the real estate sector, where he completed 85 real estate investments and exits, appeared on an HGTV special. So some of you guys may have already seen him. Rehabbed and managed dozens of rental properties, developed a waterfront division, and started two successful online real estate marketing firms. With three successful developments, including assisted in development of a Hyatt hotel and multifamily housing project, this led him into the multifamily arena, right? Which is what we're kind of talking about today. He also co-hosts the Wealth Building podcast I invite you guys to check out, called How to Lose Money. He's also a contributor to Fox Business and Bigger Pockets, producing live video and blog content on a weekly basis. He's also the author of The Perfect Investment, Create Enduring Wealth from a Historic Shift to Multifamily Housing, and has a forthcoming book that we're going to talk about today on self-storage investing. So we'll hear more about that. And also, if that wasn't enough, he's also the managing director of two commercial real estate funds at Wellings Capital. So dang, Paul, take a break.
I know, man. Hey, why?
I almost hyperventilated trying to give this bio, you know?
I know. I got to shorten that, don't I, Chris? I've already got an edited version. But why would somebody who has a money show have somebody on who has a podcast called How to Lose Money? I'm just curious.
Probably because the same reason. I lost over $1 million in the last recession. That taught me great lessons. So
Yeah.
We're probably in good company.
Yeah, probably, Chris. You got to come on our show. That's great. Yeah. Man, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, I mean, outside of what I just shared on the bio there, like, tell us a little bit more about you.
Yeah. You know, I think that covers it pretty well. I'll tell you this. When I sold my company at 33 years old in Detroit, I thought, I'm an investor now. But I actually became a speculator. You know, I became a certified shiny object chaser because I really didn't know anything about investing. I didn't know anything about creating true wealth. The way I see things, Chris, is true wealth is owning assets that produce income.
Yeah.
And speculating is the way to get there occasionally, but not on a consistent basis. You know, I think investing is when your principal is generally safe and it might produce, and it should produce income, and it might grow in value. Speculating is when your principal is not at all safe and it has a chance to make a return. And I found myself speculating and making money occasionally, but losing a lot of money along the way. And so I finally, I did that even when I got into real estate 20 years ago, and finally had a wake-up call after around 2011 or so, got into commercial real estate, and have found that that is a great path. I mean, most of the Forbes 400 wealthiest people in the world invest in commercial real estate, and now I found out why.
Yeah. You know, what you just said is a huge point. This show is all about creating more cash flow, passive income, but doing it in a way that's predictable, right? Like, predictability is way better than speculating. And people will say, well, Chris, why don't people talk more about, you know, doing predictable cash flow versus all the speculation? And I said, it's easy. Speculation's sexy, right?
Right.
You think about it, like, you never see people, I remember this 15 years ago with a lot of the info marketing type of groups and education programs that were more popular until the recession, right? But they would say things like, yeah, I made $50,000 on this flip or whatever, right? I say that's a lot sexier sounding than saying, hey, I'm earning $300 a month on this door here, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It just that's doesn't exactly sound as right. good, you know, as enticing for a sales job. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Like, predictability and wealth creation's got to be hand in hand.
That's true. You know, Babe Ruth is still famous over 100 years later because he swung for the fences, but he was also the strikeout king.
Yeah.
And, you know, real estate developers and other people who do startups, you know, they're some of the wealthiest people in the world when you hear about them, and they're legendary. But for all those, you know, 100 to 1 or 1,000 to 1 you don't hear about, they're probably delivering pizzas.
That's right. That's so true. So what have you learned, like, as you got in this commercial space? Because I know a lot of people are scared to death to be in the commercial space. And so I would love to hear what you're seeing and what makes you so excited for the next 3 years, for example.
Absolutely. So I'll get into a little bit about how I think the best way to buy commercial real estate is in a minute. But I want to talk about why the Forbes 400 invests in this, I think. So residential real estate, we all kind of know how it's valued. If you're Chip and Joanna Gaines Jr. and you can rehab a house, take a $300,000 house and, you know, put in gold-plated fixtures, I'm kind of kidding, you know, and finish the attic, finish the basement, put on an addition, and, you know, you dump $500,000 in it, you got $800,000 in this house. But if it's in a $350,000 neighborhood, you're probably not going to get your money out of that, because residential real estate is based on comparables or comps. Commercial real estate's entirely different. It's based on something that we love from school called math. Now, the math works very simple. The value is the net operating income divided by the rate of return, also known as the cap rate. And so if you can drive up the net operating income, you can sometimes sometimes shrink the cap rate. But if you can drive up the NOI, you can actually increase the value of the asset by that same proportion. And if you're using safe leverage, sometimes you can double or triple the value of your equity if you do it right. So the question is, how do we, you know, well, let's first of all go through an example. Here's a real simple example. let's say you bought a self-storage facility for $2 million. Mm-hmm. And let's say you put $1 million debt in on it, and you put $1 million cash from you and your friends' equity, in other words. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go in on day one and you sign a contract with U-Haul and actually start renting trucks out of that facility, that will add $3,000 to $5,000 often a month to your income with no capital expense out of pocket.
Right.
Now, if you add, let's say, the average $4,000 a month to your income, that's $48,000 per year, right?
Right.
Now, remember our value formula. Value is the income divided by the cap rate. Divide that by a rate of return or a cap rate of 6%. You just added $800,000 to the value of that facility. Right. And that's, you just added 80% to the value of your equity of $1 million up to 1.8, because the bankers don't share in this. So that's one of dozens of ways to add value. Now, the question is how to do it in a predictable way. And you talked about mm-hmm. predictability earlier. And it's really simple. Buy from mom and pop sellers. Or if it's in multifamily, buy it from distressed sellers. And we're going to see some of those in the coming 3 years.
Absolutely.
If you buy from a mom and pop, they don't have the resources, knowledge, or the desire to maximize income and grow the value. And therefore, you can bolt on these value adds like the one I just described and dramatically increase income and value.
That's right. Now, why do you see that there's going to be such a big opportunity in the commercial space right now? Like, why do you see that as being the place to be for you?
Yeah, so I think residential will as well. Mm-hmm. It's just harder to scale. I mean, mm-hmm. I just got off the phone with somebody trying to raise a $100 million distressed debt fund. You know, it's going to be pretty hard to do that in single family, although there mm-hmm. are ways to do it. Commercial real estate, again, because of this predictable math formula, mm-hmm. and because there are still mom and pop sellers in certain asset classes like self-storage, mobile home parks, they have a large percentage of the assets owned by mom and pop operators, and you can go in and significantly increase the value of those. And that's what I love about commercial.
And that was the kind of thing I was leading down the road to is the last few years, what have you seen with people buying these kind of real estate deals? It seems like everybody, they can come out of almost nowhere and they just go in and they say, hey, I'm going to raise money from a bunch of strangers and, or my friends and family, and just go do a commercial deal because everybody makes money in real estate, right? It's almost like the last recession in some ways, but where do you see that mm-hmm. opportunity? Like, what kind of people are the best people to buy them from? You know, you mentioned mom and pops, but where would be the signs that you see from those kind of buyers?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say back to what you said a moment ago, and that is Warren Buffett said, everything looks great now. Everybody's a genius when the market's rising.
Right.
But someday the tide's going to go out and then we'll see who is swimming without a bathing suit.
Yep.
And I think that's about what we're about to see. Unfortunately, multifamily, just like single family real estate, got completely overheated. Mm-hmm. People were paying stupid money. I mean, I know of, deals should have gone for $5 million that went for $7 million. Mm-hmm. And some of those sellers are already starting to panic right now.
Yeah.
But one great way to buy those would be, going to a regional or even a community bank to see what debt they have. Let's say somebody paid $4 million for a property. They got a $3 million loan. Mm-hmm. Well, let's say that property, let's say 2 years from now, has dropped in value because the net operating income dropped and the cap rate expanded, mm-hmm. meaning that the property dropped in value from $4 million down to just below $3 million, and it's time to refinance and the property's not performing. Well, you might be able to buy that debt from the bank for that $3 million loan for say $1.3 million, then go to them, the seller, and say, look, I'm going to give you 6 months to refinance. If you can refinance, I'll let you out of this $3 million loan for $2.2 million. If you can't refinance, I'll have to foreclose. And then you've got the asset for whatever I said, $1.5 million. And then you can take it over, operate it well, and ride it back up through the next cycle. And maybe it'll be worth $4 or $5 million again. So it's a great way to go. That's one seller I would definitely look to. Mom and pops are another. There are 44,000 mobile home parks in the U.S., and it's believed that almost 40,000 are owned by mom and pop small sellers, only 4,000 by, you know, professionally run companies. So there's a lot of runway ahead there in that area.
Sure. Now, I mean, obviously, with the timing it is right now, where this is early summer of 2020, right? From what you're seeing here, I mean, are there opportunities right now? Or are you feeling like, no, I got to wait a little bit and hold on my capital before I just jump in and start making these deals?
I have been talking about this on Bigger Pockets. And if you look at the last recession, it took, can you imagine this? 3 to 3.5 years to hit bottom.
Yeah.
And so Howard Marks talks about the wisdom of catching a falling knife. A lot of other people say, maybe it's better to wait till the knife hits the floor. And so it depends if you want to catch it on the way down or when it hits the floor. Either one has some risk because you can't really tell where the floor is except in a rear view mirror.
That's right. It's always hindsight 2020, isn't it?
Right.
Yep. That's interesting. That's really interesting because I know some people are like, okay, they're coming, right? Like, how long should I wait? It's people say the same thing with the stock market. Like, I should jump in right now. It's like, you think the market hits bottom in a recession or even a depression, depending on what we go into, right? Do you think it actually hits bottom in 1 month? No, it's never happened and it never will. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that just happens overnight.
Right. So, yep, I agree. Yeah, it's one of the great things about real estate is we've got time. Mm-hmm. You, even if you're a newbie right now, you've got time to assemble a team, assemble your tribe, get to know bankers. You've got time to do this, a lot of time.
Now, what if somebody doesn't really want to be the active investor here? Like, I know some people are active investors that listen to the show, but there's a lot of people say, hey, between the job I work, if I'm working from home or whatever it might be, how do I really, you know, do something like this where I probably want to be more of a passive investor, but I want to be involved. I have money. I just want to know what to do with it. What would you recommend?
Yeah. So my new book on self-storage, the last one third of it is dedicated to 7 different paths to get into commercial real estate investing. And one of my favorite paths is being a passive investor. You can either be a passive or a professional passive investor. And we have both invest with my company. A passive still should probably buy Brian Burke's new book called The Hands-Off Investor. It teaches you to vet a syndicator. It goes through a lot of checklists and things like that. Mm-hmm. We have checklists that we use when we vet syndicators. So as a passive, you should probably do that. If you're a professional passive, you should probably plan to do all that and jump on a plane, go meet the, you know, the syndicator in person, at least do a couple Zoom calls. See how they talk about their investors, their family, their staff. See how they treat the flight attendant or the waiter. You know, try to really get a gut feel and then go through your checklist and really make sure you know them. And like Brian Burke says in his new book, the most important thing is their morality and their integrity. It's better to have a mediocre deal with a great operator than a mediocre operator and a great deal, because a mediocre operator can mess up a great deal and a great operator can pull a mediocre deal into a great one.
That's so true. I've seen that a lot over the last almost 20 years now. you see a lot there out there today. Yes. I think that's a great idea too, just to really get to know the syndicator. Because one thing I tell people is that you can't teach, you can teach competence. You can train people to be more competent, to be a better operator, but you can't train character, right?
Right.
You can't train someone to be a better person. You can't train somebody to have integrity. That's just something either you do or you don't do, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's absolutely true. And so who they are when they're small and when they're alone is who they are. And so try to catch them at times like that.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, tell us more about your book on self-storage, because I know that's something that's become a topic that people have started to ask me more about lately too, right? And I've had a few people on here about self-storage already, but tell us about your book and how people are going to get it.
Absolutely. So we were happily surprised the last 6 weeks to see that self-storage operators are reporting increased traffic, A lot of it's online, but a lot of people are renting online, and self-storage occupancy is actually up, especially near college towns and near bigger cities. It's not so doing so well in the mom and pop rural areas where you have to walk in to rent the unit. But the new book's called Storing Up Profits, Capitalize on America's Obsession with Stuff by Investing in Self-Storage. And it's going to be published by Bigger Pockets Publishing sometime this summer. One of the things I love about self-storage is, you know, generally speaking, not always, generally, it does well in good times and bad. In good times, people are filling up their carts with stuff and they need a place to store stuff. In bad times, you know, there's the four D's. I hope I can remember them all: death, dislocation, downsizing, and divorce. And people, when those things happen, sometimes they need a place to store their stuff. And for a relatively small amount of their total paycheck, they can store their stuff in self-storage. You know, if I raise your rent on an apartment or a single family house by 6%, you might walk rather than pay an extra $60 or $80 a month. But if I raise your self-storage unit at $100 by 6%, you're probably not going to spend a Saturday and move all your stuff down the street to save $6 a month, especially since you're on a month-to-month lease. And if you're thinking like most people, you're probably thinking, I'm going to get that stuff out of there next month.
That's right. Everyone always thinks that somehow they're going to simplify and declutter and get their stuff out. And
of course,
reality is that takes many, many, many years, if ever. You know, it might be death, right? Which is one of those D's.
That's right.
So great. Yeah. We'll make sure that we get a link to be able to post on our podcast here on our episodes. People can go ahead and get that book. That's great. That sounds really intriguing. So, well, Paul, I really appreciate your time today. Any final words for our guests or listeners here?
Yeah. I would just say that, you know, again, like you said, it's the legends that sent, you know, that speculate, and they're few and far between. And if you want to make a consistent cash flow, whether it's in real estate or something else, go for the safe fundamentals. Warren Buffett was asked by Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg said, "Warren, your strategy is not that complicated. Why doesn't everybody just replicate it?" And Buffett said something like, "Well, no. Why? Nobody wants to get rich that slow."
Mm-hmm.
Well, Buffett's done pretty well for himself, and I think it'd be good to follow in his footsteps.
I agree. That's wise, wise counsel. Yeah, so, Paul, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Chris. Great to be here.
Yep. Everybody else, make sure you go check out his book. You know, we'll have that link in the show notes for you guys. But, you know, again, you know, the time, it's good to be patient, but it's also good to be proactive. Do what you can now to build your wealth in your mind first, so you can build your wealth in your pocket second. So everybody, I hope you make a wonderful and prosperous week. And we'll see you later.
Visit us online at moneyripples.com for more resources to help you fix money leaks and get your money working harder for you now.